City Public Schools. And I would remind you again that Justice Kelch is recused in this matter, and of course, Justice Wright is not participating. Also, Mr. Swoboda, good morning to you.
Good morning, Justice Kelch. May I please report, Chief Justice. My name is John Swoboda, and I represent Facilities Cost Management. We're asking that the trial court's ruling and jury verdict be reversed in this case. We're asking that it be overturned for a number of reasons. The first of which has to do with this court's opinion on the first go-around. After the first trial, this court found that the RFPs, so to speak, were not incorporated into 12.7 of the agreement, and that the district did not elect a guaranteed maximum price. Yet, at the second trial, the district was allowed to introduce evidence, and the court submitted jury instructions to the effect that there was a material or fraudulent misrepresentation. We think that was in contravention of this court's opinion on FCMG 1.
It wasn't an issue in the first case, was it?
It was an issue in the first case. It was not addressed on appeal as such as the instruction, but it was that issue.
Then how can you read the opinion as having foreclosed it?
Well, because if
you look, wasn't addressed.
Well, it wasn't addressed. I mean, I'm sorry, but it was addressed at trial. In other words, that issue was presented to the jury. But in the opinion, we read that to mean that the district did not elect a guaranteed maximum price, and the RFPs were the genesis, so to speak, of this argument that there was a material or fraudulent misrepresentation. Okay? But if you look at the RFPs, the RFPs talk about a number of different options. They don't just talk about a guaranteed maximum price, and that's the issue. If they want to glom onto one of those issues out of a multitude in the RFPs, that was the error in this case on the second go. There were a multitude of options that were discussed, and unfortunately they glommed onto one of them. But what is also, I think, problematic is the testimony of Mr. Farrell. Mr. Farrell was the board president. He was the go-to guy, so to speak, as it relates to negotiations between FCMG and the district. And when he was negotiating with FCMG, there were a number of things that came out in those discussions, and one of which, there's a bunch of different exhibits and testimony that I cite to in our brief, but I'd like to talk about a few of those this morning. One of which is exhibit number 270. And exhibit 270 is a handwritten set of notes that Mr. Farrell put together as he was reading through the contract. And about 2 inches down on that exhibit number 270, he says, "I thought we were on a cost per square foot basis." Okay? Now this was authored before the contract was signed. Okay? And he's right, because Mr. Rambo had talked to him about cost per square foot. He wanted that board to be tuned into that aspect of these projects. And every one of those budget grids that are part of the exhibits in this case have a column for each one of those projects that talk about cost per square foot. So it's a running theme throughout this project, throughout the projects. And it went on for a number of years. There were a multitude of budget grids. And so that in and of itself shows, and he testified, that he knew when they added scope to the project, it would increase the costs. And it would also increase FCMG's fees. And that's important because that defeats those defenses. You don't go into a contract and think, yeah, if we add stuff, we're going to spend more. And then at the end, after you've spent, well, $4.8 million or $2.9 million over and above what the voters voted on in 2008, you can't go back and then say, oh, time out. There was a material misrepresentation. I don't have to pay for anything, even those things that I added on, that I agreed to add on, by my choice, by my board's choice. And that's the difference here. And that's why it was prejudicial to FCMG to have that those instructions, because they knew going in, when they added stuff, they were going to spend more money. That's not a guaranteed maximum price concept. And it's never, none of the exhibits ever talk about there being such a representation during the construction. It's only after the projects were completed and substantial completion had been achieved that, and we were asked to leave and the suit was filed. It was only in the answer that first came up.
But it has been an issue then since the original answer was filed before the first trial.
It was. And we filed a motion for partial summary judgment after this court issued the opinion FCMG1 is what I call it, that said, hey, look, the court has spoken on this, and you shouldn't allow this to happen. We filed a motion in limine. Both of those things were overruled. And those instructions were submitted to the court, and there's no basis in documents or otherwise to suggest that those defenses were, in fact, relied upon. There were no documents which Mr. Farrell authored or anything else until the litigation got going that there were that this was going to be an issue. The other exhibits that I wanted to mention, and again, there's 13 or so exhibits and references to the record which support our position. This one is an email from Mr. Zerobin to a couple of people at FCMG, as well as Mr. Tom Farrell, and the board superintendent at the time, Kent Rohrer.
Which exhibit number?
It's 301. And 301 is, I'll have to say, background-wise, the high school project got delayed for a number of reasons. But one of which was there was a lot of redrawing that had to be done in the servery area. In fact, Mike Purdy, our architectural expert, testified that this was the second most redrawn project that he has ever had in his lengthy career. People couldn't decide on what they wanted to do, but what they did know at the time they were considering these changes is that it was going to add cost. In fact, the email discusses this. The important thing is Mr. Farrell is copied on this. Mr. Farrell never says, oh no, no, we had a guaranteed maximum price, or Mr. Rambo told us we didn't, you know, we could add anything and not have to spend any money. That's ludicrous.
Didn't their experts say, though, that there was going to be an additional expense when they added additional parts to the project? Didn't he testify to that at the trial?
You mean Mr. Mabry?
That
Mr. Mabry gave a couple of scenarios, and I wanted to address those. But if I could just talk about this, if I could finish this email, then I want to answer your question. There's a whole list of advantages on page 2 of this exhibit number 301. Number one disadvantage, additional cost. Seems to defeat that argument of material misrepresentation.
So what's Mr. Mabry testified to?
Mr. Mabry has two calculations, okay, which I think is... first calculation, he comes up with a figure that FCMG is owed a lot of money, okay? And he made a little mistake in his calculations, so his number really gets to be about this.
Did you cross-examine him with respect to that little mistake?
We did.
Pretty extensively?
Yes, we did. But we were limited in that. In fact, we called him in our case because we thought it was a real zinger of some of the stuff that he was saying because it was so misplaced. His second calculation, I couldn't resist the implication today with Halloween, was a bit of a trick. It really was a trick. Because he did two things. I'm getting into my rebuttal. One of the things he did was took out the complete amount of the contingency. $899,000 he took out of the budget. It was there in the first budget grid. He takes it out. He says, this doesn't count. I'm going to prepare my proportional analysis. And I'm going to take all of the ORPM out of that initial budget grid. I'm not going to include that in my calculation. And guess what? The district overpaid. Well, we took out $899,000. We took out a whole bunch of ORPM, and it was like we're brushing this stuff off, and it never comes back into the calculation. When part of that contingency, part of that $800,000 contingency, you'll see it in the budget grid, was already assigned to fees for FCMG. It never came back into his calculation. And part of the problem with that is we couldn't fairly address that because the district judge prevented Mike Purdy, our expert, from testifying about contingency under a Norquay objection, which Norquay didn't even apply.
Why not?
Because we made a response. We gave a response to the interrogatory.
Did it say he was going to talk about contingencies?
He didn't
and how things were calculated?
He said this. any and all aspects of the projects, including but not limited to the scope of the project and changes thereto and fees charged.
Was he deposed before the first trial with respect to his opinion? And did he offer any of the opinions in that deposition that he offered that you wanted him to offer in the second trial?
He did not. Those issues did not come up. Okay? But I will say this. Contingency was part of the fees. It was already assigned. It was in 11.2. Okay? So the idea that the fee couldn't have been discussed, it was in the budget and it was already assigned to FCMG.
Thank you very much. Mr. Welch, good morning to you.
Let me ask you something about your client and your client's sophistication. I guess, do they ever use a lawyer in this matter? And does that make any difference in all of this concept of fraud and I can't do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, the obfuscation that occurred here. So, in connection with it, that's such a broad question, but in connection with the contract itself, the issue on FCMG 1 was whether or not there was an ambiguity or not. This court ruled on the first appeal that there was, so we got into the issue of what was the fee, which is what this case is about at the end of the day. They're in here arguing for breach of contract. They're in here arguing for the fact that that agreement provides that they were entitled to more than the $3.6 million that they were paid. So we have to get into the contract in Section 11.2, whether the parties were represented or not, because this court ruled that there's, in fact, an ambiguity. So with respect to that $3.6 million he was paid, the question is, was there a breach of contract? Was he paid the right amount?
Was he paid the right amount for the scope of the work in 11.2 speak?
Exactly. So everybody agreed in this particular case, okay, this is a breach of contract action, what is he entitled to? Everybody agreed that Section 11.2 of the contract controls. Everybody agreed that that language says that once the scope of the project is complete, the parties were going to fix a lump sum fee that would go for the duration of the contract unless there's a scope change during the course of the project, in which case the project fee would be proportionally adjusted. Everybody agreed with that. And everybody agreed at trial, save only his reply brief. At trial, everybody agreed that the point of the beginning where they set the original scope was in January of 2008 when Mr. Merle Rambo came in front of the board of directors and presented the entire project budget and was asked very specifically about his lump sum fee. What's the lump sum fee? And he specifically told that board of directors, it's the $2 million that's sitting in that Section 4 entitled professional fees. And because so many people testified to that, I specifically asked Mr. Rambo at that trial, did you tell these people that your original lump sum fee was $2 million? And he testified, yes, I did. But he distinguished it and said, but I thought they were only asking me about my architect fee. Now, two things, Your Honor. Number one, that's dead wrong. Because if you get into the full sophisticated budget, the $3.8 million that he ultimately was claiming at trial, you would see that there's architect fees in those other sections if you could possibly understand it. So his distinguishment is in fact wrong. But second, that marks the fourth time during the course of time when these people asked him about his fee that he gave them just his, quote, architect fee and distinguished, in fact, they apparently didn't want to know the rest of his fee when they were asking the question. So at the end of the day, back to your point, at that point, because in FCMG 1, this court ruled, in fact, that 11.2 was ambiguous, we retained the services of Mr. Robert Mabry, a longtime professional architect out of Omaha, to assist in the interpretation. Why did we do that? Because we learned that whatever that base fee was, how do you now proportionally adjust it? We learned that, in fact, Mr. Rambo was taking the position that for a $2.9 million addition from start to finish on this project, he was asking for or requesting an additional $1.8 million fee. So the question became, what possible interpretation of proportionality could you get an additional $1.8 million fee for $2.9 million worth of additional construction? $2.9 million, only $1.4 of which they approved. The rest had to do with a couple of things, the major one being the fact that he missed the fact the school needed a sprinkler system. And what we learned finally when we saw his interpretation of proportionality is it included this notion of what's proportionally adjusted on the basis of square foot that we added to the project. You will see in his brief that he suggested they added nearly 100,000 square feet to this project after January of 2008. Justices, that's part of the Shelby. Because the square feet that mostly he's including there is the sprinkler system. The sprinkler system that he meant, he's going to go back and add up the square feet as it goes around the existing building and say that square footage is now part of the proportional allocation to the existing original lump sum fee. That's how you get such a crazy number. So we bring in Robert Mabry to say, is there any basis in this contract whatsoever about proportionally adjusting on the basis of square feet? How about in the industry? Does anybody in the industry even talk about the notion of square feet as it relates to fees? And the answer was no and no. And back to the original point then, he said, you have to start with the lump sum fee. I wasn't there. The board says it was originally $2 million, and then even including reimbursables, you start with $2.5 million. You either adopt that, or you adopt what Mr. Rambo is suggesting was actually in there, but he didn't tell it, the $3.8 million. Now you proportionally adjust the right way, which is you take it as a percentage of construction cost. It's kind of like a contingency, the way architects do that. And so he put out two scenarios. If, in fact, it's what he told the board, after you proportionally adjust it, he's overpaid at $3.6 million. To the contrary, in the event that you believe you start with $3.8 million, he was entitled to another $500,000 based upon a definition of proportional adjustment. Because they liked the fact that there was actually a scenario where the jury could adopt that there was something owed, they actually called him as a part of their case in chief. Why did they do that? Because they knew that their own calculation for $1.8 million was so preposterous that there was no way they had to try and get some additional fee. Back to the original point. They're arguing in the first 25 pages of your brief, they must have found on the affirmative defense because nobody could have possibly found that they didn't breach the contract. To the contrary, there was a complete plausible explanation in there under this contract that he was in fact overpaid at $3.6 million. In that regard, the only other thing that he addressed up here, so I'll get to it, is the court's ruling with respect to Mr. Purdy. In FCMG 1, there was no issue with regard to ambiguity in the contract as it relates to 11.2. As I just mentioned, we retained the services of Mr. Mabry once we learned how they were interpreting the notion of proportional adjustment and the preposterous nature of how they were applying it. In that regard, then, we set out extensive disclosure with regard to what he would testify to. They countered with Mr. Robert Kirshner, who calls himself a forensic accountant, as it relates to the same subject matter. In that regard, then, after they called Mr. Mabry themselves, they then called Mr. Kirshner. He was allowed to testify as to all his review of the invoices and how it tied and all that. The only thing the judge wouldn't allow him to testify to is how to interpret the contract, because he had absolutely no basis, no foundation in architecture in order to do that. He's not an architect. He's not even an accountant, actually. He's not an architect. He wasn't an accountant. No experience with architect agreements. No experience with construction agreements. Now he's going to testify with regard to an industry standard. Ford didn't allow him to testify to that. That's when they tried to call Mike Purdy. Because Mike Purdy, who testified in the first case because he actually worked on this project, testified with regard to what he did and what he charged, what he was deposed on, which he testified in the first trial. The issue that they're now going to try and call Mike Purdy on in the second trial has to do with something to refute Mr. Mabry, which they never designated. They're going to try and go back and bootstrap their original designation when that wasn't an issue in the first trial. It couldn't possibly have been within the scope of what they put out for him, because it came up as a product of the second trial and the whole second series of disclosures in that regard. So in that regard, Your Honors, the court was not only didn't abuse his discretion, he made the right call as to both of those. He sat through both trials. He watched the evolution of all of this. He knew exactly what was testified to in Mr. Purdy testified to in the first trial. And he was allowed to testify in the second, just not with regard to that one piece where he's going to try and refute a portion of Mr. Baby's testimony that had been provided and that they never suggested that they were going to attack. And by the way, there was no prejudice with regard to the two, and I would refer you to my brief as it relates to that. It gets very sophisticated in trying to figure that out. But I see that my time has elapsed here. Thank you so much. I respectfully request that you refer.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? No time for rebuttal. So that concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned and you are excused.